The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello and welcome to Reflections Day by Day, a program from the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. For the next half hour, I'll be reading from the appointed daily scriptures and a brief commentary from the publication Forward Day by Day, a daily devotional for disciples. This booklet is intended for any Christian or non-denominational reader and is affiliated with the Episcopal Church, USA. Our readings on this program cover the week of Monday, November 3rd through Sunday, November 9th, 2025. The commentary for November was written by Bird Treacy, a Christian formation director, godly play trainer, consultant, writer, and cat lady who lives with her wife in Massachusetts. The commentary for Monday, November 3rd, begins as follows. It's from the book of Revelation, chapter 10, verse 9b. Take it and eat it. It will be bitter to your stomach, but sweet as honey in your mouth. This day, November 3rd, is the day we commemorate the life of Richard Hooker. Here's the commentary. Today is the feast of Richard Hooker, as I mentioned, a particularly influential thinker in the 16th century whose writings help us understand so much about both scripture and ecclesial polity. For example, Hooker distinguished between seven different types of law, among them the celestial law, or God's law for the angels. Another variety of law in Hooker's framework is divine law, which is law known only by way of special revelation. This may be what the divine messenger in today's passage delivers. Traditionally, the interpretation of Revelation 10 points to the sweetness of receiving revelations from God alongside the bitterness of the judgment to come. But the passage is also, like much of Revelation, obscure and mysterious. Perhaps our familiarity with something that is sweet in the mouth and bitter in the stomach can give us some insight when we are caught between God's laws and the laws of this world, between our human nature and our pursuit of holiness. And now I'm going to read this full passage from the book of Revelation, chapter 10, verses 1 through 11. And I saw another mighty angel coming down from heaven, wrapped in a cloud with a rainbow over his head. His face was like the sun, and his legs like pillars of fire. He held a little scroll open in his hand. Setting his right foot on the sea and his left foot on the land, he gave a great shout, like a lion roaring. And when he shouted, the seven thunders sounded. And when the seven thunders had sounded, I was about to write, but I heard a voice from heaven saying, "Seal up what the seven thunders have said, and do not write it down." Then the angel whom I saw standing on the sea and the land raised his right hand to the heavens and swore by him who lives forever and ever, who created heaven and what is in it, the earth and what is in it, and the sea and what is in it. There will be no more delay, but in the days when the seventh angel is to blow his trumpet, the mystery of God will be fulfilled, as he announced to his servants, the prophets. Then the voice that I had heard from heaven spoke to me again, saying, "Go take the scroll that is open in the hand of the angel who is standing on the sea and on the land." So I went to the angel and told him to give me the little scroll. And he said to me, "Take it and eat it. It will be bitter to your stomach, but sweet as honey in your mouth." So I took the little scroll from the hand of the angel and ate it. It was sweet as honey in my mouth, but when I had eaten it, my stomach was made bitter. Then they said to me, "You must prophesy again about many peoples and nations and languages and kings." And the moving forward question for this Monday, two of them actually. First, have you experienced both sweetness and bitterness in the same situation? And second, what might this passage from Revelation be saying to you? The commentary for Tuesday, November 4th, begins with a passage from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 13, verse 51. "Have you understood all this?" They answered, "Yes." I don't for a minute believe the disciples and the others when they tell Jesus that, yes, they understand the parables he has told them. It's not that these parables are beyond comprehension, but they require so much more than a first brief hearing. Often when we first hear the stories, we place ourselves at the center and, like the disciples, think that we have understood them. We are the person who buys the field where the treasure is hidden and the prodigal son who is embraced. We don't picture ourselves as the person who sells the field without a second thought, or the son who is jealous of his brother's celebrated return. New Testament scholar Amy Jill Levine has said that parables should challenge and convict us, prompting us to evaluate our lives and make changes. But before we decide that we know what a parable means, maybe we should play dress-up with them. Try on the different roles for size. Stand in a different position. Afterward, would we still be so sure that we understand them? And now I'm going to read this full passage from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 13, verses 44 through 52. "The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field, which someone found and hid. Then in his joy he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant in search of fine pearls. On finding one pearl of great value, he went and sold all that he had and bought it. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a net that was thrown into the sea and caught fish of every kind. When it was full, they drew it ashore, sat down, and put the good into baskets, but threw out the bad. So it will be at the end of the age. The angels will come out and separate the evil from the righteous and throw them into the furnace of fire, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Have you understood all this? They answered, "Yes." And he said to them, "Therefore, every scribe who has been trained for the kingdom of heaven is like the master of a household who brings out of his treasure what is new and what is old." And the moving forward question for this Tuesday, how has your understanding of a particular parable changed over time? Now let's turn to the commentary for Wednesday, November 5th. It begins with a passage from Nehemiah in the Old Testament, chapter 13, verse 17. "When I remonstrated with the nobles of Judah and said to them, 'What is this evil thing that you are doing, profaning the Sabbath day?'" Here's the commentary. "As a children's minister, I often find that Sundays are extraordinarily busy. Upon arrival at church, I set to arranging, resetting materials, and making photocopies. While Christians keep our Sabbath on the Lord's Day, Sunday, this is often not a day of rest for me, and given the nature of our modern lives, I know that's true for many people, no matter how devout." When Nehemiah undertook the work of reforming Sabbath practices during the Second Temple period, He was both deeply concerned about respecting holy times and spaces, as well as fearful that failure to engage in right practice would lead to another period of destruction. Faced with the difficulty of practicing the sort of robust Sabbath we might envision as ideal, perhaps we might consider starting with small reforms. On any given Sunday, I may be busily preparing for children to arrive, but I can do so more mindfully. Rest can be hard to come by, but the sacred doesn't need to be. And now I'm going to read from Nehemiah chapter 13, verses 4 through 18. Now before this, the priest Eliasib, who was appointed over the chambers of the house of our God, and who was related to Tobiah, prepared for Tobiah a large room where they had previously put the grain offering, the frankincense, the vessels, and the tithes of grain, wine, and oil, which were given by commandment to the Levites, singers, and gatekeepers, and the contributions for the priests. While this was taking place, I was not in Jerusalem, for in the 32nd year of King Artaxerxes of Babylon, I went to the king. After some time, I asked leave of the king and returned to Jerusalem. I then discovered the wrong that Eliasib had done on behalf of Tobiah, preparing a room for him in the courts of the house of God. And I was very angry, and I threw all the household furniture of Tobiah out of the room. Then I gave orders, and they cleansed the chambers, and I brought back the vessels of the house of God with the grain offering and the frankincense. I also found out that the portions of the Levites had not been given to them, so that the Levites and the singers who had conducted the service had gone back to their fields. So I remonstrated with the officials and said, "Why is the house of God forsaken?" And I gathered them together and set them in their stations. Then all Judah brought the tithe of the grain, wine, and oil into the storehouses. And I appointed as treasurers over the storehouses the priest Shelemiah, the scribe Zadok, and Pedaiah of the Levites, and as their assistant Hanan, son of Zakur, son of Mattaniah, for they were considered faithful, and their duty was to distribute to their associates. Remember me, O my God, concerning this, and do not wipe out my good deeds that I have done for the house of my God and for his service. In those days I saw in Judah people treading wine presses on the Sabbath, and bringing in heaps of grain and loading them on donkeys, and also wine, grapes, figs, and all kinds of burdens which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. And I warned them at that time against selling food. Tyrians also, who live in the city, brought in fish and all kinds of merchandise and sold them on the Sabbath to the people of Judah and in Jerusalem. Then I remonstrated with the nobles of Judah and said to them, "What is this evil thing that you are doing, profaning the Sabbath day? Did not your ancestors act in this way, and did not our God bring all this disaster on us and on this city? Yet you bring more wrath on Israel by profaning the Sabbath." And the moving forward question for this Wednesday is, what can you do this week to practice Sabbath? The commentary for Thursday, November 6th, begins with a passage from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 14, verse 5. Though Herod wanted to put him to death, he feared the crowd because they regarded him as a prophet. History is full of awful rulers. Some, like the Russian Tsar Ivan the Terrible, are so bad that we include their nature in their names. Others, such as Roman Emperor Nero, are metonyms for evil, their reputations permeating our language. Then we have Herod, whose legacy places him high in the pantheon of awful rulers. Herod beheaded John the Baptist, and then, fearful of the growing following of Jesus, he condemned the prophet to death. Herod witnessed this cowardly nature in his father, Herod the Great, who was the ruler who called for the slaughter of the innocents because he worried a baby would unseat him. When we look closely at powerful leaders, we often find them operating from fear. Our task is to take our cue from Jesus, a leader who acts from the brave, bold place of love. And now I'm going to read from Matthew chapter 14, verses 1 through 12. At that time, Herod the ruler heard reports about Jesus, and he said to his servants, "This is John the Baptist. He has been raised from the dead, and for this reason these powers are at work in him." For Herod had arrested John, bound him, and put him in prison on account of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, because John had been telling him, "It is not lawful for you to have her." Though Herod wanted to put him to death, he feared the crowd because they regarded him as a prophet. But when Herod's birthday came, the daughter of Herodias danced before the company, and she pleased Herod so much that he promised an oath to grant her whatever she might ask. Prompted by her mother, she said, "Give me the head of John the Baptist here on a platter." The king was grieved. Yet out of regard for his oaths and for the guests, he commanded it to be given. He sent and had John beheaded in the prison. The head was brought on a platter and given to the girl, who brought it to her mother. His disciples came and took the body and buried it. Then they went and told Jesus. And the moving forward question for this Thursday is, what would need to change in our communities and our civic life to elevate leaders who model Jesus' style of authority and action? The commentary for Friday, November 7th, the day on which we commemorate St. Willibrord. It begins with a passage from Psalm 69, verse 34. "The afflicted shall see and be glad. You who seek God, your heart shall live." Affliction, in the broadest sense, is a universal experience. But to live in the age of cutting-edge gene therapy treatments means we have a different relationship to illness than those who lived before the development of vaccines or antibiotics. Before modern medicine, people relied on folk remedies and hope for miracles. Such was the disposition of early Christian who visited Willibrord Wells. Willibrord Wells were holy wells found along the European missionary routes of St. Willibrord, who we remember today. People traveled to these wells for healing, for epilepsy and other ailments, particularly in children. Most of us don't look for wells or springs when we fall ill or experience hardship, but we do often turn to God for help. Are those really such different acts? A holy well was not unlike a chapel. It was a pilgrimage site. When we are afflicted today, may we turn to the holy wells of our time and rejoice in God's comforting hand. And now I'm going to read from Psalm 69, verses 24 through 30. "Pour out your indignation upon them, and let your burning anger overtake them. May their camp be a desolation. Let no one live in their tents. For they persecute those whom you have struck down, and those whom you have wounded they attack still more. Add guilt to their guilt. May they have no acquittal from you. Let them be blotted out of the book of the living. Let them not be enrolled among the righteous. But I am lowly and in pain. Let your salvation, O God, protect me. I will praise the name of God with a song. I will magnify him with thanksgiving. And the moving forward question for this Friday is, what places do you consider holy wells? The commentary for Saturday, November 8th, begins with a passage from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 14, verse 31b. You of little faith, why did you doubt? Of all the miracles Jesus performs throughout the Gospels, the story of Jesus walking on water fills me with awed wonder. Perhaps that's because this miracle seems so obviously impossible. Water can no more be a stepping stone than a feather or a cloud can be. It's no surprise that when Peter steps out onto the sea, he realizes he is at risk and he begins to sink. That makes the feat of Jesus walking on water seem all the more miraculous. When Peter sinks, Jesus accuses his disciple of having little faith. While this is a rebuke, it also gives me hope. Elsewhere in Scripture, we know how much can be accomplished, even with a little faith. The mustard seed, for instance, grows into a great and hardy plant. Indeed, much like how the Father's prayer in Mark chapter 9, verse 24, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief, is followed by healing. Jesus' words to Peter also come with a hand extended to rescue him. The one who believes, even when filled with simultaneous doubt, will still be caught up in God's saving grace. And now I'm going to read from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 14, verses 22 through 36. Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side, while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning he came walking toward them on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, "It is a ghost!" And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." He said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." When they had crossed over, they came to land at Gennesaret. After the people of that place recognized him, they sent word throughout the region and brought all who were sick to him and begged him that they might touch even the fringe of his cloak, and all who touched it were healed. And the moving forward question for this Saturday is, are you struggling with your faith? You might add these words from Mark to your daily prayers. Now, as we near the end of this week and the end of the program, let's turn to the commentary for Sunday, November 9th, the 22nd Sunday of Pentecost. It begins with a passage from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 20, verse 38. "Now he is God, not of the dead, but of the living, for to him all of them are alive." I confess I hate the idea that marriage doesn't continue in heaven. When my wife and I first became engaged, we couldn't actually get married, at least not in Georgia, where we were living. Those early restrictions were painful. So it is difficult for me to read Jesus' teaching in this passage from Luke that seems to indicate that earthly marriage doesn't matter in the eternal scheme of things. But as I've spent more time studying this passage, I realize that Jesus isn't dismissing earthly marriage as unimportant. Rather, there's a much broader message. Not much of our earthly lives will transfer to the topsy-turvy world of the heavenly kingdom. And that is part of the good news of our salvation. Our marriages are no different than our riches and property. They are not part of that great beyond. Those things are vestiges of the temporal, and we are called to delight in the news that there is something greater. Now I'm going to read from Luke chapter 20, verse 27 to 38. Some Sadducees, those who say there is no resurrection, came to him and asked him a question. "Teacher, Moses wrote for us that if a man's brother dies, leaving a wife but no children, the man shall marry the widow and raise up children for his brother. Now there were seven brothers. The first married and died childless. Then the second and the third married her, and so in the same way all seven died childless. Finally, the woman also died. In the resurrection, therefore, whose wife will the woman be? For the seven had married her." Jesus said to them, "Those who belong to this age marry and are given in marriage. But those who are considered worthy of a place in that age and in the resurrection from the dead neither marry nor are given in marriage. Indeed, they cannot die anymore, because they are like angels and are children of God, being children of the resurrection. And the fact that the dead are raised, Moses himself showed in the story about the bush, where he speaks of the Lord as the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Now he is God not of the dead, but of the living. For to him all of them are alive." Then some of the scribes answered, "Teacher, you have spoken well," for they no longer dared to ask him another question. And the moving forward question for this Sunday is, when have you struggled with the words of Scripture, and what tools do you use to deepen your understanding? And that's all the time we have for today's episode of Reflections Day by Day. I'm George Douglas. Thank you so much for joining me today for our program. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Reflections Day by Day is a presentation of the North Carolina Reading Service and is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Please join me for a new program of readings and commentary next week from Forward Day by Day, a publication of forwardmovement.org. Goodbye until next time.